Hello and welcome to the Sales Technology Training Call. This is Rick Cooper. Thanks for joining me today. Got a great call today. Today is going to be a different format from what we normally do. The focus for today's call is a group coaching session. So this is an opportunity for you to get some training while we're on the webinar today. And I want to encourage you to join us out for these webinars because it gives you a chance to be able to join me and participate and learn more, and today actually get coaching as we're going through the content today. Now the call will go for between 30 to 60 minutes depending on how many questions that we have on today's call. Normally we go a full hour, but since there's no content that I'm sharing today and we're just simply coaching, it's really going to depend on how much interaction that we have during the call. Now, you can ask a question or share a win by emailing me at rickc@ericloffholm.com. But I will also be bringing you live on the line with me today to coach you while we're on the call today as well. Now, a great place to be on the Internet during the call is that on our Facebook group for the Sales Technology Training Program. So I encourage you to pop out and join me there. And you can just type in the Sales Technology Training Program into the search box and then find us that way. And let me give you the format for the call today. So what we're going to do is when I call on you, you'll have an opportunity to ask a question, share a win, share a tip, or pass. Ask a question, share a win, share a tip, or pass. So what I want to encourage you to do right now is just go ahead and jot down a few notes about what you would like to share while we're on the call. And I will call on you in just a few minutes here. All right. Now, by the way, next week we're going to be starting back with webinar number on module one of this program. So I want to encourage you to commit to join me for the next 12 weeks as we go through the content. And then the other thing I want to encourage you is to join me for any upcoming free trainings that I'm doing. And I have many that I'm doing right now. So I want to encourage you to sign up and participate. I post them periodically out in the out on my Facebook page, and I post some here within the group, so you can keep an eye out and participate that way. Okay, let me just do a quick check-in here. All right, so in a moment here, I'm going to bring on Roy, who will be our first guest while we're on the call today, to share ideas. And by the way, today we have a comment goal of 50 comments in the group. And so I want to encourage you to go ahead and pop out into the group, post a message there, and that's going to give you an opportunity to be able to get into action to share your ideas and takeaways. Because here's the thing, in a format like this, what it allows you to do is to be able to learn from others. Like, what are others doing and implementing in their business? When you listen in, it gives you a chance to be able to get some feedback and ideas and learn so that you can take those and apply those in your own business. And, you know, I have had many opportunities in the past where I've been able to learn while others are being coached. I've participated in many coaching and training programs over the years. And so by doing that, there's a lot of benefit in it. So I want to encourage you to, you know, listen in. And, you know, make sure you block out time for these calls. You know, participate on these calls live. It really gives you a chance to be able to get into action and learn more and implement as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started here. I'm going to bring Roy directly on the line. And one moment. Are you there, Roy?
Hey, Rick.
Hey, thanks for being with me on the call today.
Thanks for being here. And so I think I'm going to ask you a question about hosting, and it's something you and I talked about a while back, and I'm still looking for a good solution to this, but I am thinking of moving some sites from one host to another because the host I was using changed some of their policies in a way that is not serving the needs of my sites. And I'm wondering, what do you do for I know that you have quite a few websites you manage. Do you have one hosting package you use for all of that? And if so, what do you do for, like, managing all your sites? I guess I'll start there.
Well, it's a good question. All of my – well, actually, so a couple things here. Most of my sites are set up through HostGator. I do have a couple domains that I purchased through GoDaddy, but most of my domains were purchased through HostGator, and I also host the site through HostGator as well. And I'm also actually a I'm a reseller for HostGator as well. So I have one personal account for HostGator, and then I have my reseller account, which is where I set up accounts for clients, where I because I can go in and I can set up a HostGator account for an individual client, then I can add a domain there, and then I can set up multiple domains under it. And so that's a great way to get into action and share information, you know, store information that way on the site. And, you know, but I have had some problems with HostGator within recent years. They were actually purchased by another company. I think Bluehost and HostGator were purchased by one company. And ever since that happened, there have been a few little – there's, you know, been issues of outages and things like that. It seems to have been more stable – or seems to be more stable lately. But you know, one thing I like about HostGator, they are very good and responsive in terms of the help. And so if I have a problem, then I can quickly and easily get into action and then you know, contact them. And oftentimes I'll just use the chat feature. I'll go in through chat. You know, sometimes it'll take up to, you know, 15 to 20 minutes to get into the chat, but once I'm there, I'm able to work with a rep directly, and so that makes it easy to be able to get into action. I haven't had that much experience beyond that in terms of hosting services, so I'm probably not the best person for that. There is a there's a Facebook group that's focused around, I think it might be focused around WordPress and SEO, but I found that to be a good community to go to ask questions about different things, and I think they would probably be able to answer about hosting as well.
Okay.
You can connect to that group if you're not already part of it.
Yeah, I think you showed me a link to that, so I think I joined them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my problem started when HostGator switched over and they got bought by the other company. And one question I have about that then is which package you're using, because what I did was, for SEO purposes, I purchased a number of different packages with them so that I could segregate different sites, so in case one got penalized, it wouldn't affect the other sites, which was good for SEO, but it backfired in that the level package that I purchased, apparently they started sharing my IP with a bunch of other accounts that were had problems, and so I was getting blacklisted because these other IPs were getting blacklisted because it was a shared account, apparently. So do you know if yours is a shared account, or what is yours set up as?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't even think I know the answer to that question. I mean, it's got to be my personal account, the one where I have most of my websites on, is just a standard account through HostGator. So I imagine it's on a server with other you know, companies. And so so far I've been fortunate. I haven't had any issues like that. But I think you know, there are different price, there are different packages. I mean, basically, if you want something which is solely exclusive, where only you know you are on that server, then you're gonna have to pay a lot more for that. And so that's part of the challenge is, you know, on a server, you don't exactly know who else is on there and what's going on. I mean, there could be a porn site being hosted off of a server that you're on, and you would have no idea. And so, you know, do your due diligence, ask questions, find out. And beyond that, I'm not sure what kind of diagnostic tools that you could use to find, you know, to search and find out, you know, what else is stored on that server. That's beyond my level of knowledge, but those are good questions. I mean, it's tough to say exactly, you know, what's out there and how much control you have over things. And unfortunately, we're kind of dependent these days on making sure that everything is, you know, that we're dependent on our website being up and for the ability for people to go out there and get access to it.
Okay, and one other follow-up question on that.
Mm-hmm.
For your email account, do you use your email that's hosted on the site that you're managing, or do you have an email account hosted somewhere else, like in case something were to go wrong with the site, which is another problem I've had because of this? How do you handle your email management?
Yeah, good question. I have most... So for like my socialmediaoutcomes.com, that one is managed through HostGator. So I just went in and set up the email through HostGator, and that's where it's set up. I did investigate for a while moving over to Google to host my email. I did actually do that with my domain for rickscooper.com, which actually forwards to socialmediaoutcomes.com. And so I went in and I set up a Google account. And actually, when I set that one up, it was set up for free. And then now if you go in to set up a Google account for a company, they actually charge, I think it's like $5 per email or maybe more. So you know, if you've got five users, then you're paying, you know, five times five, $25 a month or something like that. So I decided not to go that direction for my account on that one. But there are some benefits to having it set up through Google. In fact, one of my clients, going to be next up on the list here, Angie, she had a situation where her email, she was having a problem because her email was not, I guess something happened to it where Google was actually blocking emails coming in from it. And the solution, of course, was go set up your domain through Google so that you're sending out through Google instead of, you know, sending to Google from somewhere else. And so it just shows you how much we're all dependent on Google these days. Because a lot of people are using Gmail accounts. I actually do use Gmail for retrieval of my email. So for my Social Media Outcomes account, I have a Gmail account that's set up, and then it retrieves email from HostGator and then sends email out. And I've been a user of Gmail now for multiple years, and I just found it to be the easiest email system to use as far as receiving and responding back to individual emails. So hopefully that helps.
Okay, that's kind of similar to the problem I was having. The version I was having was I think I had stuff being forwarded to a Gmail account, which was then forwarding to my desktop client, and it was getting HostGator was getting spam. Was getting marked as spam. So then when it got to the Gmail account, it was being spam, marked as spam there. So then by the time it got to my desktop client, it wasn't even getting there anymore.
Sounds like a similar situation, yeah.
Similar to what you were just... Okay, well...
Yeah, so I think the solution, if you have that, is to set up the domain through the domain with the email through Google. Now, you can still have the email... or have the domain, you know, purchased through one site like GoDaddy. You could have it hosted through HostGator, and then you could have the email set up through Google. So, you know, that's one of the things that makes the technology behind this a little bit complex, is that you can have multiple pieces in multiple places and still have everything function the way it's supposed to.
Okay.
All right, very good. Thanks, Roy. We'll come back to you in a few minutes. Let me just share the lineup here and the format for the call. So today is a bonus group coaching session, and so for those of you who are live on the call with me, you have an opportunity to participate. Here's how it works. I'm calling on people one at a time on the call, and when I call on you, you'll have an opportunity to ask a question, share a win, share a tip, or pass. And so the lineup today, we just called on Roy Rasmussen. Next up, we have Angie Nurberg, then Karen Kennedy, then Brian Hearn, then Alan Murphy, and then we'll come back around to Roy again. And while we're on the call, I want to encourage you to join me live in the Facebook group. And so go out to the Sales Technology Training Program group, check your email for the link, or just type in Sales Technology Training Program. You can also add the group to your favorites to make it easy to find. We have a comment goal on today's call of 50 comments, so I encourage you to get out there and start posting messages. I think we're up to about 9 right now, so we've got a ways to go. So next up, I'm going to call on Angie. Are you there, Angie?
Hi, Rick. This is Angie.
Hi. Welcome to the call today.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I had some questions kind of similar to Roy's, just if there's some certain programs or technologies that you know of that play nice together or integrate together in reference to, you know, either email or TimeTrade or WordPress, you know, if you had particular recommendations of this, this, and this play nice together.
Well, you know, as far as TimeTrade, you know, the major integration there is with Google Calendar. So if you're going to use TimeTrade, I encourage you to set up a Google Calendar, which, of course, you need a Google account for that. And so you would have one primary Google Calendar, and then you would set up your appointments through TimeTrade, and then you'd link the calendar together. And sometimes, I've noticed in the past, sometimes you have to reconnect it to the calendar. Sometimes they change the coding behind it, and they require you to manually disconnect and then reconnect it. So that's an integration thing that you have to work out. And then as far as WordPress, you know, basically any WordPress plugin should work there. There's, you know, literally probably thousands, if not tens of thousands of different plugins. One thing I would suggest if you're looking for plugins is make sure that I would take a look at who the developer is, because what happens oftentimes in the online world, you have developers who create something, and they're just created as a hobby, and then they just let it go, and they don't go through and update it. And one thing that needs to happen with plugins is that typically every time WordPress updates a new version of their software, the developer of a plugin should go through and test their plugin to make sure that it works, because sometimes it might break. And so you really want somebody who's committed. And so, you know, it's great if you can find a developer who is, you know, who's a company, who's committed to it. Oftentimes a model they use there is to have a free version of it and then to have a paid version after a certain point. And so that's one of the things to look for is, you know, see if they have the ability there to monetize. Other developers will just strictly work on a donation model. So if you like it, then they'll require you to, or they'll ask you to donate to help contribute some funds toward the software. But that's what I would look for there. And just look to see that there's, you know, a regular updates to it, that there's a versioning. You know, you can't always tell when you look at it, you know, just because something says version 8.9.1 doesn't necessarily mean the software is perfected. Something that's version 2.1.3, you know, could be a more powerful version of a software. So you can't always go just strictly by the version numbers. But, you know, I would look to see what the updates are, what they're making to that. And then beyond that, other technologies that integrate, email marketing systems, you know, ideally what you want to be able to do, you want to tie some of these things together. Like if you have a lead capture page, you want to send out an email and include a link. If you have a sales page, you might want to integrate your shopping cart. So if you have a CRM or customer relationship management system, you want to take the link and then embed it onto the web page. And so you have all these little crossover pieces where you might have to create some HTML code and then copy and paste and then go through and test it to make sure it works. So, you know, beyond that, I don't have specific sets of tools. I like using Optimized Press for creating squeeze pages and sales pages. Some other tools similar to it are Kajabi and also leadpages.net. Both of those kind of perform a similar function. So that's how I'd answer that question.
Do you happen to have a list, Rick, of maybe some of the websites, you know, that you recommended to go to for some of those, like all in one place?
No, not beyond just what I have on the blog. I have different things, you know, marked on different blog posts, but I don't have like a laundry list of different sites or websites or tools or services or things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let me move on to Karen. So let me bring you directly on the line, Karen. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. So feel free to ask a question, share a win, share a tip, or pass.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question.
Okay.
And my question is about Google Hangouts. Do you find that, you know, how much do you know? I guess one thing is you know, what can you tell us quickly about Google Hangouts, and if you find that that's a good way to market products.
Good question. Well, I'm not an expert at Google Hangouts. I have done Google Hangouts. One resource I'd refer you to is Susan Schlieff. She's doing more and more with Google Hangouts right now, and I think she's actually she's using Webinar Jam, which integrates in with it. So she would be a person to connect with on that. But a couple of thoughts. One is, first of all, you have to look at what you're trying to accomplish. And so I would throw Google Hangouts into the mix with teleseminars and webinars. And so I see a gradual progression for people. Like if somebody's just starting off doing presentations, I recommend they start with teleseminars because, you know, the first thing you have to do is kind of master the discussion, you know, master the topic and sharing the information. So if you're just having to talk, it's a lot easier than having to talk and go through a set of PowerPoint slides at the same time. And so the next step up from that would be doing webinars where you have a chance to create a PowerPoint presentation and then you're talking and you're going through the set of PowerPoint slides. And then the next step beyond that is the Google Hangout where you have, where you're talking, you're going through potentially a set of PowerPoint slides. You might have live video, so you're intercutting back and forth between PowerPoint slides and live video, and at the same time you're trying to master chat, say, within Google Plus and connecting with people. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things. It's like having to, you know, learn how to walk and chew gum at the same time. You've got to do multiple things at once. And so as you are practicing, you know, those skills, you know, it's easier if you just have to master one thing. And so if you've already been doing teleseminars and webinars and now you want to do Google Hangouts, then you really kind of have to make that commitment. You might need to get the proper tools in place. That is one thing, you know, just like with say wanting to do a webinar and needing software for webinars, in order to do a Google Hangout, not only do you need the Google Hangout software, but you might need something else as well. There are additional tools and software that go along with it, which can add additional functionality, and then you also have the registration piece. So one of the things with a tool like Webinar Jam, it allows you to handle the registrations for the Google Hangout, because you want to be able to invite people to the Google Hangout and then have them show up at the appropriate time to participate. The other thing is with Google Hangouts, you really have two things that you can do with Google Hangouts. You have a small Google Hangout with less than 10 people, and then you have a Google Hangout on air where it's broadcast out online, so it can be broadcast, for instance, through YouTube, and so other people can watch that beyond just kind of the 10 people that are on directly. And so I might recommend, if you want to get started, just try to start doing Google Hangouts with less than 10 people, because you can do that relatively simply, and that allows you to kind of practice with the tools. The other thing is, in my experience, anytime you're doing online video streaming, you're going to benefit from having a faster computer. And so I've tried doing some with my laptop, which is a couple years old, and it doesn't work so well. It kind of hiccups as it's doing the video and gets out of sync. And so if you've got a slower computer, you're going to run into some problems if you're trying to do a Google Hangout. And so it might be time to upgrade your computer and get the latest and greatest so that it can run video a lot better. So those would be my suggestions on Google Hangouts.
Great. That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right. Next up, I'm going to call on Lori Whaley. And we had a couple of folks drop off the call, so after Lori, then we'll go back around to Roy again. So let me bring Lori on the line. How are you doing today, Lori?
Hi. I just asked, do you have a link for your blog?
For my blog?
Yes. How do I get to your blog?
Sure. Yeah, let me share the link out on my page or out on the group. So visit.
Thank you.
My blog at... You basically just go to socialmediaoutcomes.com, and that will take you directly out to the site. And, yep, let me just test the link. It works. And then you just click on the blog button once you get there.
Socialmediaoutcomes.com. Okay. Thank you.
Right. You're welcome. All right. And so next up, I'm going to bring on Roy. Are you there, Roy?
Hey, Rick. Long time no see.
I know. We're back to you. Question, win, tip, or pass?
I'm going to ask a question about content protection.
Okay.
I'm going to ask about two types of content. Let's say that you have content that you want to only be accessible to people who have paid either through a one-time payment or through a recurring membership subscription or whatever it is. And the two types of content I want to ask about are PDF files and video files. So what are the what ways do you use or know to protect that type of content? And out of those ways, what would you say is the least expensive way?
Let's see. Good question. Okay. Well, you know, number one, let me just speak to the point that for me, I'm not really concerned that much about people getting access to information online that they shouldn't. In my experience as being a speaker and a trainer and a coach, there's a challenge in getting people to, you know, once they've purchased something, to actually consume it. So, you know, most of the people that I've worked with, Eric Lofholm, Laura Langmeyer, Adrian Ashley, everybody's struggling to try to get people into actually make use of the content. And so there is a value in protecting your information online. You don't want it just out there all over the, you know, most of the time we're trying to get information into people's hands so they actually make use of it. So that's one consideration. Certainly one of the ways to control information and whether people have access to it is by having a membership site. And so if you have a login and then you require the login for people to go in and get access to information, that's putting up one set of protection because if somebody can't log in, then they can't get directly, you know, get direct access to the information. Now with the PDF file, if you give access for people to download a PDF file, then once people have that, they can choose what to do with it. So even if you have a membership site, somebody goes into the site and then downloads the PDF file. If they wanted to, they could go take that PDF file and forward it around to people. So one of the things that I would keep in mind is if you're creating content like that, then you know consider the fact that there might be people getting access to that aren't on your email list. And so one of the things I would do is when you create your content, I would have bounce back offers that lead people back to your website because it's very possible that somebody could get access to that information and see something and go, oh, I want access to this, and then go get it. So at the very least, you know, they've gotten access to something that they didn't buy, for instance, but which could then lead them into your marketing funnel. So that's potentially a good thing. Now, PDF versus video files, with a video file, you can control more access to that because you can make the video, for instance, just strictly viewable online. And so if you set that up within a membership site, and you set it up as a video embedded onto the page to view, then you're controlling access to that because now someone would need to be able to log in and then navigate to the page and then click on the button to play it. That's the only way that they would get access to that video. Now, typically if you're hosting video online, one of the tools that I use and I recommend for clients, which is a little bit complicated to use, is called Amazon S3. That's a tool actually provided by Amazon.com. So the big online retailer also provides data storage services online, and it's a very sophisticated, reliable system. But it is a little bit complicated to use, and so I host my video files through Amazon S3, and then I play it on a WordPress site. The other thing is you can also control access by using a site like Vimeo. Vimeo would be similar to something like YouTube where you can upload video files there, and you can also put a password on a file. So if you don't have a website but you wanted to provide access to video, you could send people a link to a Vimeo file and then give them a password. And so if somebody were just randomly going out to the page, if they didn't have the password, they wouldn't actually be able to get access to the video. Years back, like when I first started my business, there were actually software programs which created ebooks which you know had like an embedded password in it or something like that. But I think they really kind of fell out of favor because it was just too complicated to create, and people just you know went toward the PDF, which was just the simplest way to do it. So, but ultimately, you know, the only way that I know of, you know, to prevent people from stealing your content is ultimately the legal solution, which, you know, most people aren't willing to do, which is if you find out that somebody has stolen your content, then you send your attorney to go chase them down and, you know, send them like a cease and desist notice. And so when I worked with Laura Langmire, I got to see a little bit of that in action because she has people, you know, stealing content online, and she has a very active attorney who will reach out and contact them. But, you know, it's one thing to try to track somebody down in the U.S. and try to, you know, follow them and deal with that. It's another thing to deal with somebody who's, you know, in a foreign country somewhere. So, you know, it's the Wild West out there, and, you know, there's only so much that you can control. So it's a good question, but those are my recommendations.
Okay, thanks. So just to recap the essence of that, I think then you're for the PDF files, it would be put it on a membership site, and for videos, it would be put it on Amazon S3 or Vimeo.
Yeah, Amazon S3, and then you can embed it into a membership site if you want. For most of the content that I put out online, I just put it out directly on my website, and I'll send a link to a membership page, but I don't require a login to the site. I actually have a project to implement a membership site, but haven't got the whole thing configured, and I set up a site through Wishlist, and part of the integration is supposed to be when people purchase, it's supposed to take them to a page and allow them to fill out or set up a user ID, and the integration on it never worked. So, you know, sometimes you implement a technology tool and it doesn't work exactly the way that you want. So, you know, one of these days I'll get that figured out and get it implemented. But that was my goal, was to have that implemented. And, you know, sometimes you get a technology snafu and you can't get past that. It's just kind of a roadblock. So.
Yeah, I've got Wishlist working okay for some things, but I have not tried to protect video content with it like that. I mean, that is one way to do it. I was actually looking for some other ideas besides that, but
I
have done that. Well, what part of Wishlist wasn't working for you?
Well, the piece when you're supposed to integrate from the shopping cart, that when they purchase, then it's supposed to send them to a page where they can create the ID, and that piece never worked. It never sent them over to create the ID. So,
okay.
Yeah. What's odd is that I've had a bunch of people be able to find the site online and set up free accounts, which there's not much information that's available free within it. But it just boggles me that the integration with the shopping cart wouldn't work, but people can randomly find the site online and set up a free account.
The shopping cart seems complicated part of that whole process.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the alternative, if I wanted to, would be to manually just go in and set up people, which is probably the direction I should have gone, is just to go in and just manually set them up one by one. But I like to automate things whenever possible. And so, you know, that piece kind of hung me up, so I got stuck on it. But I'm too busy solving other people's problems right now, so.
You know that feeling.
You're working with, you know, with other clients, sometimes your own projects take a back seat.
Yes.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, Roy. All right. Let me take a moment before we go back around to Angie, Karen, and Lori. I wanted to pop over to the Facebook page or Facebook group and see how we're doing over there. We have a goal today of 50 comments, and it looks like we're up to 19. So let me just read a few of those comments out there. Let's see. Roy says, Q&A bonus coaching session today. When it's your turn, ask a question, share a win, share a tip, or pass. Roy said, asking Rick about multiple sites, hosting multiple sites. Angie said, hi, Rick Cooper, Roy, and Alan. Roy said, follow-up questions about hosting packages, email hosting, and forwarding. Roy said, discussing integrating TimeTrade with Google Calendar. And for WordPress plugins, see who the developer is and how often they update. Lori asked about the link for the blog, and I shared that link. Susan said, hey, everyone, I just saw Rick's private message about the coaching this week. I assumed we would be starting over with session one, so I decided to get on another webinar that I've been missing every Tuesday since the sales tech training started. See you all next week. And Angie said, Google Hangouts discussion. Angie said, Roy asking question about content protection. Roy said, asking question about content protection. Let's see. All right, perfect. So we're back caught up. And let me move along to Angie. Angie, are you there?
Hello again.
Hi, welcome back.
Just a quick question in reference to blogs. Are you going to be doing any kind of a webinar or anything on WordPress?
Good question. I did a webinar, gosh, was it last week or the week before? It might have been the week before on, what was the topic? Let me see if I can find it real quick here. It was something about five keys related to websites. Let me pull up my list. I've been doing so many webinars lately. All right. Five common mistakes people make with their website. That was on July 24th. I'm actually working right now on getting all the recordings of the webinars up, but it's the pace that I have right now of all the webinars is a little bit much. There's a ton of video files that I have to convert and upload, so at some point I'll have that one up. But it's possible that I may do a training on WordPress coming up later this year. I do actually have a four webinar series that I've done in the past on WordPress training. And so it's possible that I might offer that program again. And if so, then I'll of course do some announcements that's coming up. But it's not on the slate right now, but I'm kind of taking a look at what I have and launching a few new things. And so so I don't have the exact answer to that question, but we'll see as time goes on.
Okay, good deal. I'll just stay in the conversation on that. In reference to that, too, I basically got like a verbal commission to repurpose some blog posts from a friend and business coach of mine. When you do something like that, and I know a lot of times, you know, you'll make reference to, you know, I learned this from my mentor, I learned this from, you know, from so-and-so. So is that sufficient enough just to give, you know, maybe some credit to, you know, where that information came from on those blog posts, or is that, you know, necessary, or what's the protocol?
Yeah, let me give a suggestion around this. So one of the things I encourage people to do is to create accounts through ezinearticles.com, which is a place where you can go post articles. And so if you are looking for content to share on your blog, what I prefer to do is I prefer to contact people who have an ezinearticles.com account and then say, I'm interested in sharing one of your articles out on my blog. What's nice about that is when people upload their content to ezinearticles.com, they're basically giving permission for that content to be reused. And they also create their own little byline or resource box, which tells about their business. So they give a proper give proper credit to the person who wrote the article. The other thing is that it has an ezine publisher, and so you can go in and you can select either an HTML or a text version, copy and paste it directly into your blog. So, because otherwise, then you have to go to their blog, copy and paste, and then you say, well, what do you want me to put on your bio? Do you want me to share a link to anything? And now you've got to do the work to share their information. Whereas if they have an ezinearticles.com account, you can just go out, copy, paste, and then you're done. You don't have to worry about asking all those questions and going back and forth. So to me, it saves about an hour or two of work just trying to answer those questions and get everything set up. And you don't want somebody coming back and saying, hey, I didn't give you permission to publish that on your site. I mean, that shouldn't happen. Most people, if you publish something, they're going to be happy you shared it, obviously, especially if you give them credit for it. But that's how I would handle it. Now, obviously, not everybody's going to go up and, you know, go out and set up an ezinearticles.com account. So if they don't have that, then you could encourage them to do that, but you can, you know, go ahead and share the content anyway. But what I would probably do is I would actually ask them up front, before I did anything, I would say, great, I'd love to publish one of your blog posts. Why don't you, you know, you could say, why don't you send me three blog posts that you think might, you know, be good for my blog, you know, for this audience. And send me a one paragraph bio and then a link out to your website. So have them provide you the bio before you do any work. And that way, once you receive it, then you can publish it directly with that bio. And, you know, if you have, if they sent you three, then you could publish all three of them if you wanted. You wouldn't necessarily want to do it like, you know, just a row, but you could publish them over time.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up on the call is Karen Kennedy. Karen, let me bring you back on the line. Are you there, Karen?
Again. Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Okay, so let me think. I think this is not really a totally technical question, but mm-hmm. what do you think about postcard marketing?
Postcard marketing. I like it. It is expensive. Anything that you have to print is going to cost money. The other thing is oftentimes when you do printing, it will you'll get a discount if you print more. Typically anything that has to be printed through a, you know, some kind of a press or something like that, there's a setup cost just in terms of setting up the ink and the design and everything like that. And so, if you add on more, like if you're having letterhead printed or business cards, then, the first 500 is going to be X and the second, 500 is going to be, a lot less expensive because, the first run includes the initial setup cost, and the additional is just, the cost for the paper and everything else that's involved in printing it. So, that's a consideration. Although, there are, there's some online services that you can use for postcards. One of the services that I use, for instance, is Send Out Cards, and you can select postcard designs. You can even upload your own images to it. Another service is called Express Copy. My VA turned me on to that one, and one of the things I like about that one is it can also create jumbo cards, and they can also be laminated. So, literally it creates like a permanent postcard. One of the challenges with postcards is because they're on paper, once they pass through the mail, sometimes they'll pick up little streaks and things like that on it, and so the card tends to degrade over time. If you use a laminated card, then, literally it's almost like indestructible. It's like, it's going to last forever almost, which is probably not good for the environment, but it's good for your marketing message. It's going to, stand out there for a while. One of the things with postcards is I would consider the fact that a postcard is something that literally somebody could leave on a desk or put in their files and hold on to it for a long time. So when you create a postcard, I would consider building in some value into it, that it not just be a promotion, but it be something that you could use over time. It's something that would have some information they would go back to. So like maybe a top 10 list or something like that would be cool to have on a postcard. And obviously if you have a jumbo postcard, you've got a lot of room for things like that. So think about strategic things that you can do or quotes that you can have or maybe a list of resources, websites or something like that. Although because of the fact that a postcard is in print, remember that any kind of call to action where you have a website, you want to keep that link as short as possible. Make it easy for people to just go type in. Or if you have a list of resources, maybe have a top 10 list and, have it on one web page. Like click here to go access the full top 10 list or something where people can go out. I have done used postcards for event marketing. Of course, that tends to be more, it's not an evergreen offer. So it's like, here's the event, come attend. And then once the event is passed, then the postcard really doesn't have any more value after that because it was just strictly to promote the event. So, but if you have things that are evergreen that can sit around on some people's sit around on their desk and then suddenly they pick it up and it's, a year later and they go, oh, let me go get access to this resource. That's kind of cool because then, then it's sitting around because a lot of online marketing, it comes and goes. Email messages, people get it, they delete it or they archive it and they never see it again. Or something in print, people just tend to hold on to things longer. Either they toss it in the trash right away or they tend to just kind of hold on to it. The other thing with postcards is, the typical formula for any kind of marketing message is what's the formula? Attention, interest, desire, action, the AIDA formula. Attention, interest, desire, action, AIDA, A-I-D-A. So typically on a postcard, you want to start off with a headline. You want to have something that grabs their attention and draws them in. You want to build interest in whatever it is that you're sharing. You want to create desire for something. Maybe you're promoting a specific product or a free offer, and then you want to have a call to action. And again, remember that you have two sides to the postcard, and on one of those sides, you have to leave enough room for the address. And you should also have your branding on it, as well as your own address information and your contact information. And the other thing is keep in mind the message about less is more. It's good to have a little bit of white space. You don't have to fill up every single spot on that postcard with information. It's good to have a little bit of white space, something that draws people in. Also consider including some graphics on the postcard as well. So hopefully that helps, Karen.
That was great. A lot of information. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. We're about 12 minutes before the top of the hour. In a moment, I'll bring Lori back on the line. In the meantime, let me pop back out on the Facebook page. And looks like we're up to 25 comments. So our goal today is for 50 comments. Let me go through and just catch up on some of the comments out here. Lori says, what date is the laundry list on? the laundry list. I guess that's a good question. I forget what the laundry list was that I was mentioning, but I use that term laundry list for different things. It's kind of like here are the different things that you need to know on a topic. And so on the postcard, if it's a, for you, like if your topic, Lori, is around leadership. So it might be, 10 tips to improve your leadership skills. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then create your list out of that and then include it on there. Or maybe it's a top 10 list and here are the first 5 and here's the website address to go get the other 5, something like that. So, I'm creating lists all the time. And, lists are important. In fact, if you think about like a special report, like 10 ways to monetize social media, I came up with a list of 10 ways to monetize social media, 10 ideas to improve your social media marketing. And so you want to make use of lists in your marketing. I also use lists in my email. In fact, I think it was this morning. Yeah, this morning I sat down and I wrote an email on 3 principles for online marketing success. And so the purpose of the email that I sent out was to let people know about webinars that were coming up. But because I'm doing so many webinars lately, I can't just have every email going out saying, come join this, come join that. So I have to find ways to add value in emails. And so my thought was, let me find 3 principles that I can share. And so what I did was I wrote the email around 3 principles. And so I came up with the 3 principles I wanted to share. I wrote the email. And then at the end of the email, then I shared the upcoming events that I wanted to. So lists are very important. And you can have short lists and you can have long lists as well. So good question there. Roy said, question on postcard marketing. And said, Rick suggests adding value to postcard to create interest. Create interest and also longevity. Make people want to hold on to that. I tend to be a pack rat, and so I hold on to most things anyway. I'm in an a never-ending project to declutter. But I have a lot of stuff that I've held on to. And so when I look at something, one of the questions that I ask myself is there any value to this? If it's strictly an advertisement and I don't need whatever it is that they're offering, then I just toss it. But, even like those little I get like a sales letter from the heating and air conditioning folks. And it'll have like a 21-point checklist. And I go, ooh, 21-point checklist. Let me hold on to this. And so, clearly that's a marketing strategy. They're wanting to, provide this list of things that you should look out for. And it's not that I'm going to go do those things. It's what they're going to do if they come out and take a look at it. But just the fact that it's a 21-point checklist, it automatically creates some, creates a reason for me to want to hold on to that because I want to know what that checklist is. Lori said, less is more. Yes, sometimes in your marketing it's a good idea just to do less. Roy said, I think you said that you don't have a laundry list for pieces of technology that integrate in response to Angie's earlier questions. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll compile a list of those things. See, part of my marketing strategy is not to provide everything in one place. So I want to make you do a little searching and going around, because in the process of going through and doing that and finding things, of course, you get, you know, you get exposed to other information out there, other opportunities or events or other things like that. So typically the way that I do compile things like that are in the form of a special report, which I use for opt-ins. And so like 33 simple strategies to build your email list. So if I had a specific topic around that, like Angie's question was pretty general, which was like, you know, what systems do you recommend to integrate together? That one just doesn't pop as something that has an immediate need for somebody to want to know. Like, I don't see a high demand for that. She's interested in it, and some other people might be, but if I, you know, said here are 10 systems that are great to integrate together, it's like yawn, boring. And so that's not something that, you know, just stands out to me that people would want to know and that I would want to invest the time in creating. So that's my thought on it. Maybe I'll have a different perspective at some point, or maybe I'll see it from a different angle at some point. And Lori said laundry list for sites. So, you know, I could create probably laundry lists all day long on different websites for different purposes, but it's a matter of look at it this way. Eric Lofholm published his book, The System, last year. And at the end of the book, he has a series of top 10 lists. And those top 10 lists are on different ideas, like top 10 ideas to, you know, get referrals. And so if you have a specific top 10 list, then it becomes more compelling, like, you know, top 10 hosting sites or something like that, top 10 social media sites, top 10, you know, web, you know, sites to, you know, create and publish content. Then it starts to become a little bit more compelling. And easier to compile, too. Typically, the more narrow the focus, the easier it is to go find that. Otherwise, it's like, oh, it's going to be over 100, so who wants to create a list of 100 things? But I could do a top 10 list. And, you know, that's an idea for you, too. You should think about creating your own top 10 lists. And by the way, a top 10 list is also great for a blog post or even an article. Lori said, what numbers work, even or odd numbers? Well, so if we're just talking about like a series of tips in a blog post or something, most of mine are typically odd numbers. I have used even numbers in some cases, like 10 ways to monetize social media, that's even. But 33 simple strategies to build your email list, that's an odd number. 7 steps. In fact, 7 is a magic number. I probably use the number 7 more in blog posts, articles, and and then free reports or special reports than any other number. And let's see, Lori says, is there value, great idea for other items that come into our space? Yes. And then Roy said, the scavenger hunt approach to marketing. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think you don't want your information on your site to be so easily accessible that people can just go to one page and get everything. And so, you know, you want people to spend time searching. It reminds me of that game Chutes and Ladders that I used to play as a kid, where you'd roll the dice and you'd climb up a ladder, and then you would roll the dice again and you would land on a chute, and so it would drop you back down further. So you actually, in one case you advanced, in the other case you reverse course. And so it's kind of like that on a website. You go up the ladder, you find some information, then you go down the chute to another page, and you're kind of going just back and forth looking for information and gathering it together. So on the other hand, there are great sites like CopyBlogger where they you know, they compile these guides. They have an online guide where they bring all these resources together. And that takes a huge amount of effort. You know, it could take literally upwards of hundreds of hours to compile all that information together. And, you know, typically if they're doing that, they have a lot more resources at hand for creating content and publishing, and also have it tied in most cases, with some kind of an effective lead generation strategy as well. We are 3 minutes before the top of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up our call for today. So I want to thank you for joining me. I hope you got a lot of great information on the call today, and just insights into what other questions people were answering. I think every single input today on the call was a question. So I also want to encourage you, when you're on these group coaching calls that I do, come with your successes, share some successes. Also share some tips or resources. Maybe you found some resources online that you want to share. You can share them in the group, and you can also just share them when I directly call on you. So next week we start Module 1, so we start back over in the program. So I want to encourage you to commit to join me back again for the program and go back through all the content. And, it's very possible that when you go back through the program again, you're in a different place. You might have implemented some strategies online. You might have implemented an email marketing system or a website or a blog. You might be doing more social media. And so when you go back through the program again, you're going to be in a different place, and you're going to be ready to implement these strategies at a deeper level. And I would also refer you back to the three key systems that Eric Laufholm teaches, which are lead generation, appointment setting, and lead conversion. And I want to encourage you, as you go through the program, why don't you plan, one goal would be to implement a new lead generation system, implement a new appointment setting strategy, and implement a new lead conversion process. And, for most clients, I encourage you to do that once per quarter. But if you're really committed to go through this program, then I would consider implementing all three of those systems within a 90-day period, so like one per month. And you can follow along right with the program, because this program corresponds to those three key systems. So thanks for joining me on the call. Have a great week, and God bless.